Welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 72. Yes, episode 72, confirmed. I'm Corey.
Episode 702?
And that's Daryl.
Yeah, what's up, guys?
There's a lot of... We got a lot to talk about this week. I've been playing some more Commander. I'm, like, pretty much obsessed with that format.
I actually started playing Commander 1v1.
Did you?
I built a really bad deck, and then an okay bad deck.
Let's save that for the Commander portion, but I'd love to hear about your bad decks. But there's plenty of, like, Standard and Modern stuff going on, too. So I know that we've been talking a lot about Commander lately, so we're going to go back to our roots and cover some
So there is a lot of Standard going on, but I wouldn't exactly call it Standard. I would say that we're playing Wheel of Fortune.
Wheel of Fortune?
I think we'd be more akin to the Monty Hall problem. We're making a deal. The deal is I play this card that gives me 6 life points and 6 energy, and then you die to an Ulamog. It's a good deal for me, right?
Yeah, it's a pretty miserable deck.
Of course, we're talking about Aetherworks Marvel, for those of you that have lived under a rock or don't play Standard like me. It is 30% of the Standard meta on Modo, and it has to probably be the most abysmal deck to play against the Standard, because you just can't interact with it.
Yes, it is pretty abysmal. And we called this, man. What, 2 weeks ago before the Pro Tour, we were saying, well, we made a lot of predictions on that cast, to be fair, but I think the thing that we left with was we'll probably have a shit ton of Gideon at the Pro Tour, or we're just going to have a Standard dominated by Aetherworks Marvel, and that's what we're going to get. Last week, we said the zombies probably weren't sticking around. They, in fact, did not stick around.
I mean, I think they'll stick around as an annoyance, as the grindy aggro deck. I think they will take the place of the Gideon decks. I think they're just much better at doing what the Gideon decks do.
Yeah.
They don't play Heart of Kirin, but I think they're just better at being the aggressive deck. But I think that the best deck in the format is Teamer Aetherworks by about a million miles.
Yeah, hopefully you got out of your Crypt Breakers and Relentless Deads when you could, because I've heard a lot of people say that Relentless Dead is, like, the worst card in the deck. So as soon as that spiked with that Pro Tour, I was thinking, all right, let's sell these guys. They're not coming back from the dead yet again after this. We've had many iterations of this Zombies deck, and I think they were a little bit of a flash in the pan there.
Yeah.
Now, it's a bold claim, because it is a pretty resilient deck. It's a pretty aggressive deck. But in this environment, I think you've got to be doing something pretty flashy to keep up with this Aetherworks Marvel. And that is not just lucking out. You've got to have a plan. Now, is there something that can be done to balance this out? Is this meta just going to shake itself out? Or are we all going to just, like, look at these results and say, oh, it appears to be the case that Aetherworks Marvel is the best thing you can be doing in Standard. Why try anything else?
So I think the key here is that the energy package is just very powerful. It lets you cheat on lands because you have a tune with Aether. It gives you removal. It gives you great card draw. So, like, that energy package is great. So the key here is sort of how do we protect against the one thing that Aetherworks Marvel has a problem with, which is how do I protect against my fail rate?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a percentage of time, you know, you have 6 big dumb things in your deck, and if you don't draw a big dumb thing, and you activate Aetherworks Marvel on turn 4, you've drawn 10 cards, so you have, you know, 6 and 50. Let me get out the old hyper geometric calculator here. So, yeah, population size is 50, successes is 6, sample size is 6, number of successes is 1. And you're literally a coin flip to have X greater than or equal to 1. You're 55-45. So, you know, there is a fail rate. So if you only get to activate Aetherworks Marvel once and you brick, you lose. Like, So the problem with that is that's 100% true if you're able to kill them after 1 activation. The problem with that is they get to play a card that gains them 4-6 life and lets them activate Aetherworks Marvel again. And they play 4 of that card. So it's going to be really hard to kill them. Dealing 26 is a non-trivial task. So then once you get up to, you know, getting 12 shots at Aetherworks Marvel, you're going from, you know, a coin flip to, you know, I'm not 100% sure. I'm going to consult the the math machine again. But I'm gonna guess like you're like an 80% favorite. You're an 82% favorite to hit a big thing in two Aetherworld Marvel activations.
So the deck is really variable, right? I mean, yeah. I think that what can be taken from this is there are just that many people running this deck, you know? And so what that brings me to think is we've sort of set the precedent for like this is a design problem. Why in the world would Wizards like put Ulamog and Eldrazi in the same set or in format as Aetherworks Marvel? But hang on.
But
my claim, stop me after I say this.
Okay.
Is that it's not a design problem as much as it is an information problem. And I think that the abundance of data and the abundance of lists posted lead people to pigeonhole themselves into this must be the best deck, I've got to play it. And it kind of shuts the doors to possibilities of anything else having a chance in Standard.
Yeah.
So what are you going to say, Daryl?
So there's a couple things. The first thing is the intention for R&D was that they were going to have shortened cycles for rotation.
Yes.
So the rotation was supposed to have Battle for Zendikar out by the time Aetherworks Marvel was printed.
Yeah, and right, okay, so that's a thing, right?
So that was the original intention,
uh-huh.
But they backtracked, and that backtracking caused this disaster.
But here's the thing, girl. I'm not specifically talking about Aetherworks Marvel. I'm talking about, like, we've set the precedent for, like, Standard environment has become stale, let's ban something. But that's always been the case. Standard environments always become stale. That's freaking Standard. Like, things happen. People formats. But now that these results get posted from Modo dailies every single day, you see this ubiquity in Aetherworks Marvel. You log into MTG Goldfish right now. You look at the most recent competitive Standard League results. Top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 decks are all very similar Teamer Aetherworks decks. Why would you try to play anything else if the results are telling you that deck is that potent?
So here's where you kind of cut me off. I'm going to go to the other
portion. Go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
So that was part one, is that Aetherworks Marvel is a mistake and exists because of a shifting in R&D's timeline. Originally, when R&D developed Aetherworks Marvel, it wasn't going to be in Standard with Ulamog for very long.
Yeah.
So that happened when they shifted the timeline, and now we've got a complete mess on our hands. So now we come to the second question, which is, why would you play any other deck when you have all this Standard information? So the problem isn't that, like, there become this, like, collection of top-tier decks in Standard. Like, you have a limited card pool, there are only so many good cards. That's going to happen. But that's the kind of the point of Standard, is it lets it be accessible for players who are new. You know, we're not, all decks full of $100 mythics without the goal, you know?
Hang on, you got a go-kart going by.
Oh, probably a wee whacker. They're probably doing my lawn.
Okay. Can you say that again? Kind of drowned out by the engine.
Sure. So the goal is for Standard to be accessible to new players. So that limited card pool makes it easier for there's less interactions for players to have to wrap their head around as a new player.
Yep.
So the game is more accessible. So kind of by default with that limited card pool, the best cards are going to rise to the top. And it's up to the players to make the mana work or make this work or make that work. And that's fine. But the problem that we're seeing and why people are saying the stuff that they're saying is that if you look at the play patterns that the top decks have recently been engendering, they're not entertaining and challenging. Like, when Smuggler's Copter is the best card in Standard, it's not particularly difficult. The hardest decision you have to make is what creature to crew your Smuggler's Copter with, because you should always attack and always loot. And maybe it's right to, like, crew it and block and loot. The toughest decision you have to make is, what guy do I crew it with? And since it's crew one, the most obvious decision is your crappy 1-1. So, like, there's not a lot of decision-making to be done with a card like that as the best card in your meta. With Heart of Carrion, there is decision-making, because it's, you know, what planeswalker do I take counters off of if I only have one and I need to keep it in play? You know, if crew three, that's a lot of creatures. You know, occasionally you get there with your 1-1 that turns into a 3-tool toolcraft exemplar, but, like, not always. So it gives you some you know, play decisions to be able to be outplayed or outplay your opponent. So, like, I think Heart of Kirin is an okay card to have at the top of the meta. But when you look at cards like Reflective Range and Emrakul and Gideon and Aetherworks Marvel, they don't engender, like, they don't create a play pattern that is entertaining. It's just like, oh, did you have turn four Gideon? Nope, your deck's just really bad. Like, it's so much worse than, oh, turn four Gideon, you're dead. And yeah. Same thing is like when Reflective Range is legal or Collected Company is like, oh, I collect company and Reflective Range and Jace, flip my Jace, get play this Collected Company. Oh, I put a Tireless Tracker in Reflective Range and play, bounce your stuff, beat you down. Or it's just like, I'm going to play Ishkanah and Emrakul. That's just the deck basically played itself. And like there weren't a lot of challenging situations.
Let me ask you this then.
Were created.
What was the most recent standard environment that you would say epitomized this kind of like critical thinking type of metagame?
RTR Theros.
And name some decks that are.
There were a ton of Sphinx of Revelation decks. There was Mono Blue Devotion, Mono Black Devotion, Heroic. It was Theros into RTR, because there was Heroic and there was Devotion decks and there's a few enchantment decks.
I mean, I would dispute Mono Blue Devotion being a critical thinking deck that was kind of a brainless, like, 1-2 sure. 3 tempo, like, just beat them down.
Sure. I mean, there's always an aggro deck that's like that. Mono Blue Devotion happened to be that aggro deck.
But I understand what you're saying.
Mono Black Devotion was a lot of sequencing. The control decks against Mono Black were very difficult matchups. Yeah. Like, there were important cards that the games revolved around, and you could protect those cards by doing certain things, and, like, you could, like, try and play Pack Rat and let it get countered, and then, or get it detention sphered by discarding a swamp, and then you get your end-of-world connections in play to beat your blue-white opponent. You know, there are different lines of play that you can make that you can kind of jockey for position to create an advantage.
Would you say that the presence of a top-tier control deck makes that the case or helps that situation?
I think having a playable control deck, it doesn't even have to be tier one, but it has to be like legitimately playable and not just like always afraid of dying on turn four to like just a card that's so good that it just ends the game.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, because if you look at like turn four Gideon, there's no hero's downfall to kill a Gideon and make it to where your opponent only gets a 2/2. And you get to untap and have your mana up to be able to interact with your opponent.
Uh-huh.
Like, the difference between Heroes Downfall and Ruinous Path, the gulf is so large that, and it's only just instant versus sorcery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the sorcery speed, if, like, Heroes Downfall was printed again, I think you would have a legitimate available control deck, because then you would have an answer to Heart of Kirin and an answer to Gideon that's playable.
Yeah.
And then you could... Then you would have to figure out how to beat Aetherworks Marvel. So, like, there is a blue-red control deck in Standard right now, but it doesn't feel particularly playable. Like, I think it got carried to first place in the Open this past week, in the Star City Games the Open, the Team Open. I think it got carried
the
by...
Team Open, yeah.
Yeah, I think it got carried there by his teammates.
We've got... I mean, it's ridiculous. We had three Standard events other than that this weekend. All three of them were won by some variation of Aetherworks. Actually, all of them are Teamer Aetherworks, for that matter.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's really pretty... it's really solidified its foothold in this meta. Now, people are going to be calling for bans, right? I mean, this is what happens, though. You know, this is very predictable. The sky is falling. We're not going to play Standard until this card gets banned. We're all dropping out of the game. We're going to sell our Standard collection because we're not interested in playing this meta. Is that the right answer?
I don't think I think for, like, the if they're concerned about diversity in Standard, I do think they need to ban Aetherworks Marvel. I think the question of, is Aetherworks Marvel beatable? The answer is yes. But there's only really two cards that can, or three, you know, two or three cards that can beat it. It's Negate, the one mana Ceremonious Rejection, and then Transgress the Mind. So the problem with Aetherworks Marvel is you can't hit it with Lost Legacy. Otherwise, that would be a great answer. You can hit the Ulamog, but, like,
yeah.
Then you still have to beat, like, the rest of their deck, and they can cobble some stuff together. and they just are making free spells off of Aetherwish Marvel. So you can't hit it with like an extraction effect.
But
so
the problem is there's Dispossess. Dispossess is Lost Legacy for artifacts, yeah.
Oh, but it's only for artifacts, and I don't think that's worth playing. Because I don't think every deck...
It's like one of the most commonly used black cards in modern standard sideboards right now.
Interesting. I guess every deck with zombies has an artifact?
Yeah, yes. I mean, you get like the vehicles, you get Aetherwish Marvel.
Walking Ballista.
The Towers, too. I mean...
Towers? I mean, I guess there just is an artifact in every deck, so it's playable.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to sideboard it in a lot of matchups. But, like,
right.
You know, I don't think that's a good answer to Aetherwish Marvel, because it's only really good if you're taking something and interacting with their gameplay. If you're just taking Aetherwish Marvel out of their deck, it gives them the ability to know that they have to put together this other game plan.
Yeah.
So, like, there's no very, like, you can't interact with or take your opponent's energy away.
Yeah. Yeah, I get
like you.
That is the funky thing. It's a new resource. It's kind of like it feels like an emblem, you know? Like when your opponent has an emblem that's just like taking over the game, it's like you just can look at it. You can look at it and you can feel sorry for yourself, but you have no permanent, you have no spell, you have nothing that can bounce it, can remove it from the game. It's always there and it's just going to sit there in front of you until it kills you. And it's the same case with the energy. You're right.
Like if they would have printed a spell or an artifact that said like, when it comes to like a two mana artifact creature, it's like a 2/2. It says when it comes to play, your opponent loses 3 energy. Like that would have been a better answer to Aetherwish Marvel than anything we could think of.
Or like
because like you you slow down their Aetherwish Marvel activations, which you know when you combine it with cards that can kill Aetherwish Marvel that are playable main deck because they cycle, and things like that. You now get to this point where or you have cast out which cycles and is an Oblivion Ring which you can cast at the speed for Aetherwish Marvel. You know, if you could play this bear on turn 2 and eat your opponent's Attune of Aether and their Aether Hub on turn 2, you know, and put them to no energy, then you're like fighting a battle you could win with Aetherwish Marvel. But since we don't have a card that does that, it's just like Aetherwish Marvel is basically a 4 mana spell that says look at the top 6 cards of your library, cast a spell for me. And then it just hangs around. It like has rebound almost, you know, or flashback.
Yeah.
And it has flashback with mana that you can't interact with. So it's just like super awkward that it's set up like that.
Yes.
So, I don't know.
So, outside of these like big events, there is a lot of diversity. I'm seeing like FNM type of games type of environments. That's awesome. I went to FNM on Friday, had a really good time. Everyone there played a different deck. It was kind of cool.
That's cool.
And then we actually went to game day the next day. I went with my friend Chris, and Chris was playing a black white kind of mid range deck that he brewed up. It's pretty awesome. It's got like Liliana, Death's Majesty, and like the 2/3 Death Touch Lifelink creatures, and a couple of the Morbid guys. A bunch of these really good like Aetherborn like creatures that you can reanimate with Liliana. And he had a match against the one guy that was playing Teemer Aetherworks at the event. They both got into kind of like top deck mode, but Chris had major advantage there. Like he had him down to like 9 life. And I was watching the game thinking to myself, you know, this could just explode in the favor of the Teemer Aetherworks player as long as that player just draws Aetherworks Marvel. That's it. That's all they need to do, and the game is 100% switched in favor of that player. Yeah. Whereas Chris is sitting there with a Liliana in play in like 3 creatures, one of them being like a Noxious Gearhulk. It's like you have no choice right now but to just play as aggressively as possible. Like you've just got to abandon ship. You can't defend your Liliana. You just got to attack with everything you can because the Aetherworks player has 14 energy accumulated. They top deck an Aetherworks Marvel. They can whiff on it twice and they'll still win the game. He's got like a bunch of chump blockers, and that's all you need to just like stand your ground and survive until you draw the damn card that gets you into a Lamog and kills, you know, like the 2 cast outs that are on top of his like Chandra and stuff. And he did, and he lost the game.
God forbid he never draws Aetherworks Marvel and just draws 10 lands. He's like, all right, Ulamog.
You know what? That's exactly what happened. He had 8 lands and 2 of the Servant of the Conduit. And so the Servant of the Conduit were his blockers, and Chris was thinking, those Servant of the Conduits are going to attack my Liliana and kill it. And I'm thinking, no, those are mana 9 and 10 for Ulamog when he draws it off the top of his deck and just kills your cast outs. And that's what happened. It's like, you got to play it. You got to make sure those guys chump, lock, and die.
You got to get them. Get in there.
So, anyways, I played Blue Red Emerge, thinking that that would be a really good deck, like, nope, against, like, zombies. It seems to have, like Kozilek's Return, like, the ultimate version of it could kill, like, all the zombies. I've got, like, Magma Spray in the board. It was decent against zombies, but it just couldn't keep up with, like, these really aggressive, like, zombies and energy decks. But that deck's got ridiculous variance in that, like, it mostly loses to itself, right? Like, if I mulligan to six, I pretty much can't win the game because I need all seven cards in order to be successful. Yeah. But I have to have, like, all of the pieces, too. You have to be able to pitch a scab. You have to be able to pitch from the scab, like, a prized amalgam. And then you have to be able to get, like, an Elder Deep Fiend. And if you can do that, you're in business. But if you are missing one of those pieces, it's kind of like Drago, take seven damage, Drago, you know, like, you just lose the game outright because you can't race. You miss a turn and you're that far behind. So I feel like the deck is cool. It could run really hot like it did for me on Friday. I went like 3-0 in the FNM. And then I took it to game day and I went 1-3, which is probably my worst performance at an event like that before. I just got totally shellacked by aggressive decks. Didn't even have to play Aetherworks Marvel for that matter.
Yeah, there you go.
But, that's all I have to say about Standard. I think we've beaten the dead Ulamog horse.
Can't wait till that card rotates. Oh boy.
Yeah, I think I'm generally opposed to like 9 and 10 mana like just haymakers being printed at all. You know, like I think that the idea that these cards cost a lot of mana and they can be powerful because they cost a lot of mana is kind of like null and void when you have cards like Aetherworks Marvel and like Tooth and Nail and stuff that can just like cheat cards into play anyway. It's like it doesn't matter that it costs 13 mana. We're gonna find a way to cheat that bastard into play, and you're gonna die to it.
So let's talk about Standard.
What more?
Well, just a little bit. And by talk about Standard, I mean, let's talk about Friday Night Magic.
Yeah, okay, go for it.
So they released the new promos for Friday Night.
Yes, that.
And I'm going to be honest, they're all absolutely beautiful.
They are.
So July is Reverse Engineer. August is Renegade Rallier. September is Fatal Push. Reverse Engineer looks good. Even though I'm not a fan of the card, still looks nice.
Dude, it's a freaking Ford Model T.
It is. Renegade Rallier is gorgeous, and it makes me want to play in every format I can and just acquire four of these and just put them in people's faces.
Put them in people's faces.
And then Fatal Push, I don't know how I feel about the Fatal Push.
Dude, that is the best one. It's awesome. Fatal Push looks so sick. It's like,
I can't really tell what it is.
It's like a dude, like, getting fatal pushed. I don't know. He's, like, falling into, like, some kind of delirium.
Abyss? Yeah, I guess. Like, it's kind of hard to tell. I would like a higher resolution scan that I can, like, zoom in on to be able to tell what it is.
But, yeah, like, I think that art looks, like, pretty awesome. I think if you blew it up, you'd be pretty...
Yeah,
pretty
I would like to be able to blow it up. I'm sure blind. This foil's gonna look great. I'm a little blind, so I would like to be able to blow it up, but yes.
But yeah, this is certainly encouraging. The FNM promos have been good as of late. This month, it's like Unlicensed Disintegration. You've got like Aether Hub coming up.
Good.
I can skip July and not be too upset because Reverse Engineer is just kind of like meh.
You get one for a commander just in case.
Yeah, but I'm certainly going to need four of these Renegade Ralliers.
Yeah, beautiful. You're
playing these Fatal Pushes. That's a good way to control the cost of Fatal Push, which is up at like $8 right now. Yeah. Unfortunately, you have to wait until September for Fatal Push.
Yeah. So, all right. I'm done talking about Standard. That was a long one to talk about.
Okay, so let's go into Modern before we get into Commander Land, because I feel like that's going to be the bulk of our conversation today.
Sure.
But Modern is looking quite interesting. On the other hand, we haven't had many, like, huge events in Modern lately to really shake things out, so there's been quite a bit of diversity in the format. As always, when that happens, Affinity is always a good go-to deck, because it's just consistently good, and that's always the case. But lately, we've had this Counters Company deck sort of rising up, which is the Abzan Company deck, which kind of takes another combo into the mix, which is Vizier of Remedies and Devoted Druid into, like, Walking Ballista 20 you to the face.
I mean, 20 is 20 is not ambitious enough, but yes.
I mean, when they're dead, they're dead. You just stop. Someone, your friend grabs you by the arms and says, it's over. He pulls you away. Game is over. All right.
Fair.
Wizard of
All
Remedies
right,
is
fair.
One and a white for a 2/1 human cleric. If one or more -1/-1 counters will be put on a creature you control, that many -1/-1 counters -1 are put on it instead. That is the worst wording, but I don't know how you could do it.
I mean, you could just say one less.
Yeah, they could say one less. -1/-1 counters -1.
Yep. So to English that for you people, if a creature were to come into play with 2 -1/-1 counters, if you have a Vizier of Remedies, it comes in with 1.
Yeah, so it's like better than Malera for this deck because it makes Devoted Druid just like straight up infinite mana when you want it to be, which is
correct.
A card from Shadowmoor. It's a common from Shadowmoor. One
yes.
in a green for 0/2, tapped at a green. Put a -1/-1 counter on it to untap it. And you can do that as many times as you'd like. A play set of set Devoted Druid right now. $36. It's a freaking common. So I'm glad to say that I have like a whole stack of them sitting somewhere in my basement that I can go and dig out.
Ship. Ship. Sell those.
But yeah, we played a lot of Shadowmoor when that set came on, that's for sure.
Yeah, sell that as fast as you can.
But yeah, so one of the rare incentives to buy Shadowmoor boosters at this point.
Yeah. So there's a couple of infinite combos in this deck.
Yeah.
There's Malera, there's Vizir, Kitchen Finks, Mistress here. There's infinite mana with Devoted Druid, and you use that a couple different ways. You use that with Walking Ballista to make infinite damage, as we said. Use it with Duskwatch Recruiter to dig through your deck and make infinite damage. Use it with Ronus the Indomitable to make an infinite power trampler.
Yeah, I love that
one. Yeah, that one I didn't see until I looked at the deck list again. And then you have Court of Calling, which you can cast for infinite to fish up whatever piece that you'd like to kill with. And you do have a Murderous Redcap to go with the Vizier combo to infinite damage them as well. So,
a lot of
different combos going on here.
The deck seemed to be playing either one Walking Ballista or one Ronus or two Walking Ballista. To have
like
two options. Some of them just one. I like the Ronus in the deck. I'd certainly want to be playing that because that's a card that like if you know when you have to abandon ship on the combo, like that card can single handedly like turn your deck into a really aggressive like mid range deck. Just sink all your mana onto that guy and go to beat town.
Yeah, I agree.
But Duskwatch Recruiter is a card that I've tried in collected company decks for quite a while, and I was always a little disappointed in it. Because in Modern, it just never really seems to flip, and I always wanted to put that 3 mana into some other creatures. Those decks are, like, always playing spells, you know?
There's your first problem, is that you wanted to flip it.
Well, one of the two. You know, like, there are situations where you have a creature that you want to be casting for reduced cost. It certainly makes Walking Ballista look more appealing.
There's your problem. You wanted to flip this card.
At times, yes.
Oh man, you just want to draw cards with it. It's literally just there to be a Sylvan Library.
Yeah. But it fits perfectly in this deck as it, you know, you sink all your infinite mana into it and get exactly what you need. Now, what's missing though is if you do the Kitchen Finks combo for infinite life, typically the plan was to scry infinitely as well because you scry from the Viscera Seer sacrifice.
Yeah.
And you would scry the Murderous Redcap to the top of your deck. What do you scry to the top of your deck now when you get infinite life?
The Murderous Redcap?
They're not in these decks anymore.
I'm looking at the third place one from the Modern Classic, and it has a Murderous Redcap in it.
Okay, so that's an exception to that. There's one deck out of like the last like 6 or 7 of these that have placed that has the Murderous Redcap in it, but typically you don't have them.
So you could grab Devoted Druid, probably.
You could grab Devoted Druid, then you have infinite mana.
Yeah.
And then it takes an extra turn to find...
Or you just get Quarter Calling. Or you just get Quarter Calling. Like Court of Calling for Eternal Witness and have like a little value engine, or you could scry like Gavinny Township to the top of your deck, or
yeah,
I mean there's a bunch of options. It's just like what, but yes, I agree with you. The Kitchen Finks combo seemed out of place because it doesn't really have a good like thing to draw into.
Yeah, you don't always win from the infinite life. You know, there are plenty of decks that don't care about your life.
I mean, so, there are plenty of decks that do care about your life.
There like, are plenty of decks that do.
Like, I don't think you can name one that doesn't besides, like, Mill.
Ad Nauseam.
They can't kill you.
Yeah, that's true. They can't kill you. Yes, you're right. What am I thinking then? Not Ad Nauseam. What's the artifact deck? Not Affinity, the artifact deck. Lanterns. Lanterns will mill you.
Oh, yeah, Lantern. Yeah, Lantern is superior, correct.
Yeah, I mean, like, Storm can go into Laboratory Maniac Town. I don't know. I guess you're right. There aren't very many decks that really care about
So really, the answer of what card are you supposed to scry to the bottom or to the top is the card that's not in this deck, and it's like Blood Artist.
Yeah, well, that would do it too. I mean, that would do the same thing as Murderous Redcap in this situation. But
yeah, I mean, Blood Artist is much easier to cast in Core 4, and you could collect the company into it. But like, yeah, I think that the correct answer would be Blood Artist. But the answer is they don't have a Blood Artist either. So
yeah, I think that the Devoted Druid and Vizier gives this deck a whole another edge to combo on, because a lot of the ways that you would combat like a Kitchen Fink combo deck would be like graveyard things, like Rest in Peace. But this doesn't use your graveyard at all. These creatures stay in play the entire time.
So still loses to Grafdigger's Cage.
Still loses to Grafdigger's Cage because
unless you have the Dust Watcher creature, it loses to Grafdigger's Cage because you can't quarter calling and you can't collect the company.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't. That's not a dead end for you, though. I mean, you still have plenty of ways to get past that.
It is a dead end. It is a dead end because you use your mana to go get... You use your mana to cast Quarter Calling to go get your Finisher.
Right, but you got Duskwatch Recruiters. You got, I mean, like...
Yeah, if you draw... Like, some people are only playing one. Some people are playing four Duskwatch. Like, if you don't have Duskwatch or Ballista, then you're dead-ended by Cage.
Yeah, that's fair. That is certainly gonna hurt. You kind of have to predict those cages, and you got to board in your Kisali Pride Mages and friends.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. I mean, but if you don't draw them, like, it is worth noting that you could get dead ended by a cage.
Sure. Yeah, it definitely hurts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a concept to think about. Like, just be careful. Don't get dead ended by your opponent's cages when you're trying to make infinite mana and then cast like Cord or Eldritch Illusion or Collected Company or whatever item of choice you're going to cast.
Yeah, so we can take a look at this modern classic if you'd like. There's some other decks that are worth noting on here as well. Connor's Company placed three times, put three decks in the top eight, which is really cool. This is in Louisville, by the way. Eldrazi and Tax is in second place. Eldrazi and Tax is kind of making a resurgence as well.
And that's very good.
Crusader is very good against
Modern
Death Shadow. Yeah, against Modern. And so it's been making some main deck appearances in these decks. But there are just some decks that can't beat a resolved Mirian Crusader. And so
it's very good against Modern.
So I love that. Affinity, Abzan, Red White Nahiri. Which, what is this? This is kind of
Sun
like Red White.
It's Sun and Moon, the Blood Moon deck.
Yeah, okay, Sun and Moon. And then we've got a Green White Company deck. So the Green White Company deck is more like a Hate Bears style deck. Doesn't have the combo in it.
Yeah.
But these are a lot of fun, too. I kind of miss having Renegade Rallier in the mix of these Abzan decks now that we've gone like full-on combo town. The whole value engine with like Renegade Rallier into like... You know, Fetchland Renegade Rallier, like return like Voice of Resurgence or something back to play is.
You just don't think big enough, friend.
Strip mine. This is modern, Daryl.
It's strip mine. Like, people play like two basics.
Yeah.
You just strip mine them twice and you laugh at them and then you play Restoration Angel and strip mine them again. Like,
oh, you're saying Ghost Quarter is strip mine?
Yeah, Ghost Quarter is basically strip mine in this format. If you have Lean and Arbiter in play, it's 100% strip mine. You just, like, lean an Arbiter, like, turn 3, do nothing, turn 4, Rallier, double strip mine you, turn 5, Resto, Blink my Rallier, strip mine you, like, just
yeah,
punish.
I mean, that's exactly what these green-white decks are designed to do. They're 4 Ghost Quarter in the main, 2 Horizon Canopy, too, which is a fine target for it. It's a good way to activate the
revolt. I like some cards, yeah, I'm in.
Horizon Canopy needs a damn reprint, I tell you. $69 in paper.
It's pretty expensive online too. It's $62 online for 2 Horizon Canopy.
Yeah,
$30.
Yeah.
Then
I also want to check out Harlan Freer was playing blue, white, red control, which is Team Geist, in place what, 9th?
Team
Weast? No, 13th. I'm sorry, 13th at that event. But yeah, Geist, hey, welcome back.
13th, Team Guiste. All right, let's take a look here.
Basically just a bunch of 4-ups in this deck.
El Guiste, 100%. 4 Molten Rains in the sideboard. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, when it Molten Rains, it pours.
When it Molten Rains, it Molten Pours.
It Molten Pours.
Get those Spell Snares the hell out of here. Go to hell.
It is funny to see the 6th most played card in Modern is Devoted Druid. I never thought this day would come.
Oh, man, that's great.
People will be calling for its ban soon, right?
I think Zero Remedies is the more ridiculous card.
Zero Remedies.
Devoted Druid is at least an elf. You can play it in elf deck. But, like, jeez, guys. Standard card, really? Standard card? Come on, guys.
Malira is, like, all but gone now. I mean, Infect decks were really hurt by, like, the banning of Gitaxian Probe and things. Vizier of Remedies, like, totally replacing Malira seems kind of funny. Now it's, like, Infect decks are like, oh, well, that one really bad matchup for us is gone. We can kind of take advantage of that again. Now, Vizier of Remedies kind of cancels out the Infect damage on your creatures.
Yeah.
But it subtracts one from it is all it does, really. But maybe Infect should be eyeing this situation up and be like, oh, it's time. It's time to make our comeback. Hit them while they're down.
Coming back.
So, anyways, let's go on. We got one more thing to talk about here. And this Team Geist deck is kind of making me think about Commander. I don't know about you. I've felt is missing from the Commander meta is Geist of St. Traft. You don't see a whole lot of that guy, do you?
There's just not a lot of great stuff to do with him, honestly. Yeah. Like, Tasker, I think, is just a better version of Geist. Even though it's not hexproof, because there's not a ton of removal, a lot of people are leaning on counter spells.
Yes, they are.
And so the other problem with Geist is that the Angel doesn't do commander damage. So Tasker just kills them faster.
Yeah, that kind of sucks. I thought about that. You do see quite a bit of these, like, kind of Voltron decks. They're certainly not like top tier in Commander right now, but there's a lot of like Thrawn Voltron, and I saw a couple of people playing Earl the Mistwalker too. But it seems like in a one-on-one match, it's kind of tough to deal with a Boggle style deck.
Yeah, I like Earl the Mistwalker. It's a little slow is the problem.
Oh, it's very slow. It's too slow. It's much too slow.
You think it's too slow?
Oh, yeah. Dude, here's the thing. Commander has become this. There are two things, and I told you about this earlier, but I'm going to share this on the cast as well. It's pretty clearly defined by two strategies. One is a mono blue control strategy into some kind of combo engine, be it like Polymorph into Emrakul or like some kind of high tide combo or Temporal Fissures or Temporal. What is it? The one that bounces.
Just Time Walk. Temporal Fissure is what you're talking about.
Yeah. And then the other one is just any green deck is a ramp deck, you know, and it's just race out the lands as fast as you can and play something huge that is probably an Ulamog, you know? There's really no use in trying anything else because you cannot race those two strategies. You can't.
I mean, there are some people that have tossed up some 5-0s. Sorry about that.
Hi, Mom.
Yeah, hi, Mom. There's some people that have tossed up some 5-0s.
Very
few. Sorok, Dragon Claw. So you got the like the rug decks, whether they be like combo Animar, Sorok, Dragon Claw. You know, you've got a lot of the mono green decks, Nissa, Titania, Savala, all trying to do the same sort of thing, Azusa.
Yeah.
And then you've got a couple of control decks. You've got a control deck, a big hardcore control deck in Brea. You've got a mid-rangey deck in Thrasios plus Vile Smasher. You've got, like, a couple tempo decks. Tasker plays as a tempo deck. Chrom and Vile Smasher plays as a tempo deck. And then you've got, the blue decks, Brawl, which is mostly a polymorph deck, Jace, which can be a polymorph deck if they really wanted it to. But it's mostly a high tide engine style deck with a bunch of time walks and stuff.
I mean,
like
all the mono blue decks are kind of doing the same thing, right?
Not really. The Jace deck is like a combo deck that's trying to play like time warps and stuff like that, and like play Emrakul, like the Promised End.
Yeah.
But it's not like a polymorph deck. Whereas like the Vanillion Click and the Baral deck are both trying to just polymorph you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of annoying, but And there's like the lone weirdo in this whole pile, which is the Gitrog monster.
Yeah.
Like, not really sure where he came from, but well, the Gitrog monster is here.
That's very much a green-based ramp deck as well. It does the same thing as all the other green decks do in the early turns. It plays more of a like kind of Jund style game though, with a bunch of discard spells.
I was saying, it's not a ramp deck. It's just like put the Gitrog monster into play and like Jund them out.
It's not a ramp deck. It plays Corsair. It plays Azusa. It plays Lotus Cobra. It plays Deathrite Shaman. I mean, there are plenty of ramp cards. Oracle of Maldaia. It wants to play lands as fast as possible.
It's not your typical ramp deck, because like when you say a ramp deck, you're looking at like ramp up to like large threats as a payoff. This is just like put the Gitrog monster into play and accrue value.
Yeah, I see.
And so like all of these things that help you put these extra lands into play, they do give you sort of the strip mine combo, which is a big thing that like green is looking it has. But like it's really also just giving you lands to sacrifice so you don't fall behind with the Gitrog monster. And you can slowly draw cards and which dredge is low, which gives you lands, which you play to like do various things. So like I can tell you that over my experience of playing this format, there are a couple things that are egregiously like just not good for this format.
Yes, let's hear them. That was my question for you: is are we in a good place? If not,
no,
what's the problem?
We're not in a good place. Wasteland and Strip Mine are a huge problem.
Yeah, they're terrible. That's the Gitrog's payoff is Wasteland Strip Mine plus Crucible package or Titania, anything that you know can recur the lands, Life from the Lump. But that's not like that's not untrue for any of the other green ramp decks. They all have those packages in them too.
Yeah,
if you just happen to draw the Strip Mine and
that's
the Crucible.
That's like the Tatsuger win condition. It's like if they don't get Tatsuger in play, they just Intuition for Loam Strip Mine X.
Yeah.
And just Strip Mine you. Loam Strip Mine Wasteland. And they're just like, alright, Dredge Loam, Wasteland, Strip Mine. Like, and so like, that I think is a problem. Emrakul is kind of showing itself to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of the generals are, I mean, there are a couple problem generals.
I think Azusa gives a...
I think Azusa is unfairly... I think Azusa is completely fine. Two of your problem generals, a lot of your problem generals are the generals that win the game very quickly. So, Biosmasher, Tassiger, Brea are the three. Because Brea is just a 6-power, 4-mana creature.
Yeah, Brea hasn't proven to be a problem as much. I think that like Tassiger and Brea allow you into wedges and 4-color selections that are just good to play control magic. But Tassiger on his own doesn't seem very abusive, other than the fact that he's just a really cheap.
He's a Tarmogoyf you always have access to, so you don't have to play that many creatures. So you can just fill your deck full of like counter spells and removal spells and just play Tarmogoyf every turn that you have to put Tarmogoyf.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is if that, like, it wasn't so easy to just play Tarmogoyf every turn, because you're playing, like, Mental Note, Thought Scour, and just a bunch of blue draw spells and counter spells that you're just, like, always interacting with your opponent. Like, if you didn't have to play Mental Note every turn, or you didn't have to play Tarmogoyf, then you just played counter spells. If you had to play Tarmogoyf, it was 1 mana.
Uh-huh.
So, like, that's really awkward to, like... Like, you see a lot of decks playing the card Hide and Seek.
Yes.
That's to beat the blue decks. Like, the blue decks get crushed by this card.
Because they can get the Emrakul?
Because they take the Emrakul out, and then your deck...
Oh, yeah, that's the one you can search for a card, exile, and gain life, and you gain 15 life. Oh, that's a great answer to Emrakul. I didn't even thought of that.
Yeah, or you just play Bribery, and then you have it.
Yeah, man, guilty as charged. I've been playing that Brawl deck like crazy, and I'm part of the problem. I know it. But while it's legal, I'm going to maximize my value on this thing, because I have it. I have the deck. But I feel like there's some matchups where I play against like a green deck, in turn two against like any other deck, I feel like I have to kind of be a little more reserved about playing my Baral because it's going to die, right? Yeah. On turn two, if I play against a mono green deck, I've got to erase that deck, right? So I'm going to drop my Baral. Turn three, if I've got a Polymorph, it's game over. There are very few things that you can do about that because the green deck's answers really are you have to like ramp into an Ulamog to remove that Emrakul.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. What else? I mean, there are very few things. Mostly it's big payoff creatures that can target it, and that's it.
Yeah.
There's very few removal spells that can even hit the Baral in the first place.
Yeah. So I've been playing a really bad Magic deck that's been super fun.
Yeah.
And I've just been playing Carador, like Carador combo. And it's like a slower version. You can have like Entomb, and I'm not playing a lot of Dredgers. I'm playing like a mid-rangey deck with a combo finish. And it's been extremely good against the blue decks and extremely bad against the ramp decks, which is exactly what you would expect out of a mid-range deck.
Yeah.
So I've been playing like a small Hate Bear package. I've been playing Spirit of Labyrinth, Thalia, Guardianth Raven, Gaddig Teeg, Vryn Wingmare, and Aethersworn Canonist to sort of slow down the blue decks. A couple of Fleshbag Marauders and a Shriekmaw to kill like Baral and stuff like that. But then there's just not really a good creature against the ramp decks. Like the best creature, like Mind Slicer, like something to make them discard a bunch of cards. Nah. But like, there's nothing really there that I can find that's getting it done. And I've added a bunch of like mana elves to try and go faster. I probably should add Stoneforge Mystic for Skullclamp so that I always have access to Skullclamp. And then like cut some of the, like the best grindy card in the deck is Recurring Nightmare. But it's like hard to figure out what you want to put, like what targets you want to have for Recurring Nightmare because your creatures don't always end up in the graveyard. Like I have a Panharmonica on the deck and I think that's just wrong. Like the card is just too slow.
Yeah.
Birthing Pod almost feels too slow. And so it's just like, how do you like piece this together? Like, you know, I'm playing like Gonti to try and like gain a little advantage and cut cards out of their deck. But it's just like trying to find the right collection of cards. Because you can't really just like jam Armageddon in your deck.
No, you can't.
to just try and beat the green decks. Because they're also going to have mana dorks like you. So like, Armageddon doesn't get the job done. So like, this deck probably just can't ever beat a green deck, which is kind of awkward. Mm-hmm. And the deck should probably play Collected Company because there's so many like small creatures in it. But you know, there's a lot of misses, so it's really awkward to like play Collected Company. So it's just like, what, you know, how do you interact with this green deck? Is the problem because like if you play against your green deck, you can't win.
Yeah,
you like have to hope that they never draw a threat.
Yeah, you kind of just have to, race those decks, really. They go so fast. I know that you don't agree with me on the Azusa thing, and I know that the results haven't shown it yet. But I've played a lot of this Commander 1v1, and based on my experiences of trying just about every general that's up here, Azusa is going to show itself as a really really overpowered commander. The ability to just. Yeah, it is Albusto. You've got to answer it right away because on its own, it like allows you to run way fewer ramp spells in your deck and just have more payoff spells. Yeah. And just run like 48 lands. Play Azusa on turn 3, you're up to 5. You go 6 on turn 4. That's prime time. You know, then you're straight up like going to Strip Mine and Wasteland Town.
I think you get like Strip Mine Ancient Tomb or Strip Mine Ancient Tomb Iavugan or Strip Mine Iavugan or something like that. Or Strip Mine Ancient Tomb.
Right, and Ancient Tomb brings up another point too. You got Ancient Tomb turn 1 or even what's the green land that taps for 2 mana and you can only use it twice before you sacrifice it?
There's like a...
Hickory Woodlot. Either one of those two like Ancient Tomb style cards you can turn to an Azusa.
Yeah. But yeah, I think like the I think it's like 6 drop into Ancient Tomb plus Temple of False God. Mm-hmm. Then you untap it with 11 mana. And you get to just like slam an Ulamog or something like that, or Kozilek or whatever. And just.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. Like,
go off.
It makes your Garrix really powerful, and Nissa's. You run, like, all the Nissa's and Garrix in these decks.
Yeah.
But it's real scary. And like I said, it's a green ramp deck, so it's going to be running in Crucible of Worlds package. So if you can hit that, then it's even scarier.
And I mean, and you get to just play, like, the very obvious good cards against the blue decks. You get to play Choke, Tsunami, Carpet of Flowers, Hall of Gemstone for the, like, multicolor decks. So you get to play a bunch of, like, very good hate cards on top of that. So, yeah, it's kind of scary. Like, so, I mean, but I don't think you can ban all of the green generals. So, like,
that's not what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, since you can't ban all of the green generals, I'm fine with just all of the green generals being a thing.
I just think, like, as far as generals go, the two generals that I've seen that are most oppressive for... I think I'd even make that three. Three generals that I've seen that are most oppressive purely for their abilities and using their abilities to the maximum is that one, Azusa. Vile Smasher has been insanely good with all the Delve taking extra turns.
The Delve cards and free spells.
They resolve that and it's game over. And then the other one is Baral. Baral just fits so perfectly into a control shell. It's like it's just as good as any one of these green ramp generals because it reduces the cost of everything you play by one. It's like
So like
so obvious.
The thing that I think is like is much better than people give it credit for. Is the Silvala deck.
Yeah, you think so?
The mono green Silvala deck. Okay. Like you have like finishes. your general is your combo card.
Oh, what's the combo?
It plus Umbramantle makes infinite mana.
Okay, let me read this out loud because this is kind of an odd card.
Yeah. So Silvala, let's start with Silvala, Silvala Heart of the Wilds. 1GG, 2/3 legendary elf scout. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield, its controller may draw a card if its power is greater than each other creature's power. Green tap, add X mana of any combination of colors to your mana pool where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. And then Umbramantle is an equipment. It's 3 mana. Equipped creature has 3 untap. This creature gets +2/+2 to end of turn. Zero to equip. So what happens is if you have Umbramantle and Silvala in play and you untap it once, you can make infinite mana. If you untap it once with Umbramantle's ability, you make infinite mana. So, like, but you also just have giant creatures that help you play other large giant creatures that draw you cards. So, like, you can't tutor for Umbramantle, but you just have this accidental, like, kill condition, and if you draw Umbramantle, they're just straight up dead. And then it has all of this, like, all of this card draw built in. But if you play a 3-power creature once Silvala is in play, you draw a card. Because most of the time, your opponent's not going to have a bigger creature than, like, the creatures you're playing.
I'm seeing Phyrexian Dreadnought in this deck. Can you play a Phyrexian Dreadnought, draw a card, and then actually respond before the trigger sacrifices Dreadnought? I had 12 mana pool.
You can.
That's pretty techie. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the idea of that a lot, but I'm sure it's going to happen to me one day, and I'm just going to throw my computer against the wall.
Yeah, it's not going to be fun. Not going to be fun at all. But yeah, so I mean, you just have these big, giant monsters, but you can also just make infinite green mana and like Court of Calling or Greens of Zenith or Early Harvest or Genesis Wave and put your whole deck in a play and kill them.
I see.
So there's that too.
So I guess I'm wondering, like, if you can think of, there are so many commanders out there. What do you think is the sort of like most untapped, has the most untapped potential to be a competitive commander deck in online?
That's I not think being Animar. Right.
Animar, yeah.
Yeah.
We're seeing some Animar. There's one deck.
So there's one deck, and I looked at the deck, and I'm not particularly a huge fan of it.
Okay.
So, like, he's playing a bunch of mana dorks. And so, like, that's all well and good, but he's just missing, like, all of the kill conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the Palancron combo with Deadeye Navigator or just with itself. Because if you get Animar with 5 counters, the Palancron combo is free if you have 7 lands.
Oh yeah.
He's playing Paragon Drake to try and do it with Kiki Jiki to make infinite mana. Oh, that doesn't even make infinite mana. That's weird. He's playing like Kiki Jiki, Prestermite. But you have all the Eldrazi when you get the discount high enough, are kill conditions. and you have, like, you can play play it as a Glimpse of Nature combo deck, and there are two creatures that are basically Glimpse of Nature. And then there's other, like, very large, and, like, you can just get, like, there's an Imperial Recruiter combo with Phyrexian Metamorph. I don't remember how it works, though, that you can, like, bounce Animar enough to 21 somebody. So you Imperial Recruiter for Metamorph.
Yeah.
If you have enough counters, play Metamorph for 2 life. Copy Imperial Recruiter, go get... Dreamstalker. I couldn't think of the name of the stupid card.
Oh, yeah, the 1/5.
Yeah, Dreamstalker. I mean, you play Dreamstalker, and so that's 15 pumps. And then you bounce Dreamstalker, and you play, like, Dreamstalker for as many blue mana as you have available.
Yeah.
And that's should be enough pumps to kill him with Animar. So, like, there's, like, that as a combo. So I think there's a lot of, like, definitely good, like, card advantage cards that you can play and ramp creatures, and there's just definitely a lot of power in the deck. There's, like, Teamer Sabertooth is a thing you can do.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of power here. It's just, like, getting the right list of creatures in the Animar deck to make it go.
Sure.
But I think cards like that that are, like, a win condition in and of itself and a combo engine are, like, very untapped potential.
Yeah, I mean, he's got protection from white and black, which is appealing for, like, purely for the Tassigur matchup, but other than that, there's really not a lot of white and black. There's really not a lot of white being played in Commander right now. So, unfortunately, those aren't the best colors.
I think there's a lot of space to play, like, a Grand Arbiter control deck.
Yeah.
And just based on, you know, the taxing of your opponent. But again, I don't know what's good enough in Grand Arbiter to, like, make it go.
Sure. You know the one that I've seen that's been pretty cool was Skullbriar, I think, is pretty good. Skullbriar is green and a black for a 1/1 haste. When he deals damage to a player, put a +1/+1 counter on it. When he dies, you keep the counters on him, but when he's returned to your hand, he loses them. So, unfortunately, it's really bad against all the Baral decks because their answer for him is just, like, bounce out of your
snap.
Hand.
Yeah, it's snap.
But if those decks kind of, like, subside a little bit, like, I think there's potential for that deck to be really good because you can just play, like, straight up, like, Jund, and, like, again, it's just, like, a consistent Tarmogoyf that you play with haste.
Yeah, know? So, like, the key here is you play Varals and Scavenge Creatures. And so you, like, use Varals to scavenge Phyrexian Metamorph onto your Skullbriar.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's your big combo finish. It's like, you know, put this 12 power worth of counters on my Skullbriar, hit you for 22 or whatever, you know, hit you for a bazillion. Something like that is, like, that's, like, your big combo finish. I'm sure there's, like, a mono black deck to be had somewhere here.
Yeah.
I don't know what it looks like.
Like I said, know. I've seen the Sidisi, like, ad nauseum tendrils. Like, I think Sidisi is probably, like, the general choice for, like, a mono black deck.
Sure.
At least for a combo-based deck. I don't know.
Sure. I can see, like, a mono black control deck with, like, Dark Combinat and Phyrexian Arena and, like, all the black card advantage engines, like, Grey Merchant and Recurring Nightmare as your win condition.
Yeah.
So just, like, continue to kill off your Grey Merchant with Recurring Nightmare and then just, like, Recurring Nightmare your opponent to death. Like, I could see that being a... Like, it's got a good Baral matchup because you have all this discard to, like, slow your opponent down with. You can play Uba Mask to cut off their draw spells and exile all their cards. You have plenty of black removal to kill, like, Leovol and Tassigur and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You have, like, Diabolic Edict for Ulamog or for Emrakul. And then, like, you have the black creature removal spells that can kill, like, Silvala and stuff like that when your green opponents are trying to get going. So I think there's a lot you can do with a mono black deck. You could play, like, Gonti as the general. You could play Xiao Dun, Warlord of Wei, and have, like, a black Eternal Witness. Because then you could play, like, all the Cranial Extraction effects and pick apart your opponent's, like, combo deck. So you could play, like, the Jester's Cap, and you can play, like, the exile 3 cards. So you can eat, like, the Polymorph Brawls. You can eat their Emrakul or
against like other combo decks, you can eat their combo pieces, or you can just go in and take the like best green bombs, mm-hmm. and just like, oh, take your strip mine, take your Emrakul, take like, so if we look at just like a random Azusa list, like take your strip mine, take your Emrakul, take your Ulamog, and leave you like Terastodon, Sundering Titan, and just like go ahead and figure that out. Like, you know, like you don't have the things that are just going to completely annihilate me because I'm a mono black deck, so I don't care about Wasteland. Like, it kills my Cabal Coffers, but sure, fine, whatever. I'll suck it up for that one, you know. And so, take your strip mine from me, so you can't just grind me out of the game and make me have no lands. Take your Emrakul the Promised Land or Emrakul the Aeon Storm, so you can't just Emrakul ball me. And then take like an Ulamog, so you can't answer my stuff. And you have like Karn and Ugin is like, if you need pet catch-alls, you have catch-alls. Like you have like Graveyard Hate with black, with like Leyline of the Void and stuff like that. So you have like all the pieces that could be good in a deck like a mono black deck.
In
mono black general, I don't know what general it is. I don't know if you want to play an aggressive general, or you want to play like Dante as a value general, or you want to play like Xiaodun as a value general, or you just want to try and play like some cheap black legend and just go like super aggressive and be like suicide black.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know if you can really tap out on turn 4+, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of a sorcery speed deck, so you just have to tap out and just not care. So. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, the format is extremely fast right now, which is you know, surprisingly quick to arrive at this. But, like, so fast that, like the mono-red decks are really just kind of getting, like squished out of the format by these blue and green combo decks. And part of that is the fact that you have 30 life. You know, it's really hard to, like, just burn someone out with 30 life, and you're still drawing 7 cards to begin the game. But you would think that having that consistency of, well, you really are drawing 8 cards because you have your general, right? So your 8th card is, like, always a Bellstriker, right? So it's like you've always got a turn 1 play, like, you would think that that would be like a pretty powerful deck, but it didn't take long for us to figure out this meta, and that deck just can't keep up anymore.
No.
So, I don't know. I guess I'm interested to see what happens. I'm a little nervous to see what happens because I didn't invest in a bunch of these cards that I feel like are probably on the chopping block as far as that July date rolls around and we're banning some things.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably see some of the tutors go.
I think so. I think like most likely cards to get banned are like Vampiric Demonic, Strip Mine, Wasteland. Ancient Tomb might stick around. Like really, if you want to look at the cards they probably should have banned, you can just, like, let me Google the French Commander list, and I'll tell you the ones that, like, jump off the page at me.
Yeah, we've already done this, right? Why go back, you know?
I mean, we're here. That's literally where we're at. It's like, we've played this, and we're like, man, they screwed up somewhere. Where what did they miss? Like, what did they truly completely miss? And there are some cards on the French list that I'm like, it's a little aggressive.
Honestly, it's kind of cool that Wizards is like, let's give these a shot, and everyone's like, oh, sweet, you know, like we can play with our Ancient Tombs again, you know, we can see what it's like. But then at the same time, it makes the market really volatile because then all the interest in those cards goes up when that deck becomes really oppressive, and then they ban it, and then it loses it. It sucks all the value out of that card, and people are left pissed off because they have it.
So, like cards that are very clear that they missed are I mean, according to this ban list, the only one that I think is like a true and complete and total miss is Strip Mine and Vampiric Tutor.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, you could argue that Tassinger and Vile Smasher are just complete misses.
I don't know, dude. Brawl is pretty impressive. We got to do something about Brawl.
I mean, Brawl is just a fair card. Like, it's just 2 mana.
The deck. The deck, yeah. Not the card.
Oh, well, I mean, then you just ban Emrakul.
Yeah, well.
Then they polymorph into some, like, much worse card, and you're just like, I don't care, it's not Emrakul. I have lands.
Yeah.
If you want to polymorph into Ulamog, sure, I have lands. Uh-huh. Like, there are more answers to Ulamog than there are to Emrakul, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that really the only 3 cards that I think were truly missed are Tassinger and Vile Smasher, and then Strip Mine.
Sure.
Like, other than that, I feel fine with the entire list. Like, you know, there are cards that you could argue, like, yeah, Leovold's really dumb and oppressive. Why is it allowed?
That's this format, though. You know, that's what this format has to offer, and you just got to get used to it. And once you can accept that, you're okay. But I think it, from the perspective of a player coming into this format and being like, oh, let's give Commander a shot, and then, like, the first couple of days of playing
it's
like,
very,
miserable.
It's a very bad time. Yeah, it's not a good time. Like playing this like, mid-range junk deck, I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah.
I drew these cards that just don't matter. Like...
It's a bummer because you come with the knowledge, like you can play EDH for 15 years and say, oh yeah, I know which cards are good in EDH. That knowledge doesn't apply here. You know, you
have to incorrect, sir. You think and you are incorrect.
But once you figure out, like, okay, my opponent's playing Baral, like, you've got to mulligan according to what you're playing against, right? Like, there's some green hands that I just cannot keep because my opponent's playing Baral, because if they happen to go polymorph Baral on turn 3, I lose. You know, there's nothing I can do with a particular hand. Most of the hands, you know?
If they hit their one outer on turn 3, they get you. Yeah, that's why.
By the way, Synthetic Destiny is bugged. One of the polymorphs in the deck. It's what does it cost? I think it's 5 and a blue for an instant speed card. It exiles all the creatures you control, and then at the beginning of your end step, it polymorphs them. But for some reason, it does not count the general. So if you've played this deck, you've probably had an experience where you polymorphed using Synthetic Destiny, and it just removes your general from the game, and then the turn ends.
That's awesome.
So it's a terrible bug because it's a common card played as a, like a win condition in these decks. So you think, you go from like thinking you're going to win the game to just losing. But you can get I submitted a complaint report, and I got my entire entry back. My 80 tickets back, or 80 play points back, I should say.
So I should have submitted a complaint report, but I took a screenshot of it, but I was just too lazy to do it.
Yeah.
Which is, I played Caridor and attempted to evoke a Shriek Maw for its evoke cost with Caridor in the graveyard, and I could not cast it for the evoke cost.
Oh yeah, that's.
I could only cast it for 5 mana.
Yeah, that sucks. We're going to find a lot of bugs like that because I think that these interactions with the generals.
That was a really bad beat because I was playing mono white. He had 2 creatures in play.
Yeah.
One of them was a flyer, the other had a Sword of Fire and Ice on it. All I had to do was kill the flyer to stay alive, which I could with my 2 mana Shriek Maw that I couldn't cast from my graveyard because it's bugged.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Beats. Bad.
Submit the complaint report, man, or file your for reimbursement. It's so easy to do, and they're really pretty good about giving you your money back.
Yeah, I will. Like, it's just like, man, that's rough. Like, like I might keep experimenting with this Caridor deck. I just don't think it's good enough.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if the mid range version is just not good enough. That's my problem.
Sure.
Like. Well, what do you think? What do you think? I should just abandon ship on this mid-range deck and just play a mono green deck?
I don't know. I think you should share the list with me so I can put it up on the website. But you should also share the list. Well, all right. So we're gonna put it into something where it can be viewed better. But we're gonna put the list for the Thalia deck up too because we promised that last week.
Oh,
we
did finish Thalia deck is. Did we finish it?
Yeah, I thought so. We got pretty damn close. Anyways, we will finish it. And we'll post it on the website.
I have a bunch of cards that are over. I'll export a copy of this Caridor deck.
I took a look at your deck, and honestly, my first thought was you're running like 38 lands, and I feel like you have 38 lands, correct?
Yeah, 38.
Yeah, plus a few mana darks. I feel like the ramp decks just beat you to Strip Mine Package and just like shut you out of the game. If that's
so,
the case.
Beat you to the Strip Mine Package, honestly. It's that you just, like, you're a mid-range deck against a ramp deck that, like, you're playing, like, a 5-drop, and they just play an Ulamog. And you're like, oh. Well, that's much better than my 5-drop.
There are only 2 things to do in Commander right now, I'm telling you.
I mean, I want to keep trying and, like, editing the deck and see if I can make something reasonable out of it, but I don't foresee this being...
You need more combos. You need Devoted Druid and Vizier.
Honestly, it might be that I need more combos.
You do.
And then just have all the dudes, like, draw the disconnected combo pieces. Like, I should probably be playing a Kitchen Sink in my deck. I'm not. Just because I don't think the card does enough, even if I play the combo. Like, Infinite Life doesn't matter if you don't have permanents.
Yeah. All right. Well, we rambled enough about this. I think it's time to close out here.
Sure. I'm a fan of that.
All right. Me too. We will talk to you next time. See you later.
Later.
Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website. And if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.